an easy lesson today, okay? Something none of us have to worry about, especially me. All right. What we're going to be talking about today is pride. And nobody has a problem with pride, right? Especially me, no. And so if you would, turn to Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 2, and we will start there. Proverbs 11 and 2, it says, "When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom." There are some other verses that we can look at about pride, and the first question I want to ask you about is pride ever good? And I want an answer. Is pride ever good? Can we have pride in something that is good? And really, if you look at pride and you look up all the verses, because I typed pride into my wonderful Bible search thing and came up with 60 of them. I read all 60 of them. All 60 of them. God has never said anything good about pride, ever. Now, I guess we could say, yeah, pride in the Lord. But most of the time when we start talking about pride and when God talks about pride in our hearts, it's never good. You know, so many times we can say, you can take pride in your work. You can take pride in this or you can take pride in that. Jordan can take pride, and Caleb can take pride in their big moose they've taken. But truly and honestly, is that true? It's God who really does all those things. That's who we should be giving glory to, not what, look what I have done. And so when we look through the Bible, we will see God never says anything good about pride. If you'll turn to Proverbs 8 and verse 13, we'll go through Proverbs here, a few verses here, and just see what he has to say. Proverbs 8 and verse 13, it says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy, and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate." Proverbs 13 and verse 10 says, "Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom." 14 and 3 says, "In the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them." Proverbs 16 and verse 18, "Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." And the last one we'll look at least for right now, verse 29 and 23 says, "A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit." So when we look at this, just those six verses I think we've taken a look at, what does God think about pride? It's not good for man to have, is it? When we look at the definition of what pride is, most of us don't need to be told, but we do need to be reminded of the seriousness of it. So pride, when you start looking at the definition, it says pride is a high or arrogant opinion of one's own qualities or attainments. Pride gives rise to a feeling and attitude of superiority over and contempt for others. It is a conceit that overweening opinion of oneself, overestimation of one's own qualities. And when we start really looking at pride and we start thinking about it, and we have pride like in our work or in our accomplishments, it really is putting somebody else down, isn't it? Look what I have done. Muhammad Ali, I guess you could say, had some pride. I am the greatest. You know? And I think that's the way a lot of men feel these days. If I'm the greatest at one sport or I'm the greatest at my work, or I'm the greatest at this or that. It truly is. You're putting other people down, aren't you? Pride is a wicked evil. And of course, who did it begin with? Who? Satan. Satan it began with. If we of course, Brother Gene didn't write me the verses down. He did give me the verses, but I believe it's Isaiah 24 in verse 17. Yeah, that would be a lie. That didn't happen. What is it? I know it's in Ezekiel, and I know it's in Isaiah. Well, anyhow, we'll go on and I'll read it, but he doesn't say exactly where it's at. I believe it's Isaiah somewhere, though, where Satan, he comes up and it says, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nation? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars." 14, ain't it? Isaiah 14? Isaiah 14. I knew it started with a 4. I just couldn't remember. Thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. So, pride started with Satan, didn't it? And you notice that one little word that keeps being repeated over there? I. When pride happens, we just look what I have done. And so that is where pride starts. Pride is the devil's sin. And when you look at it, pride ruined the glorious life of the universe's highest creatures. Pride causes everlasting shame and torment, didn't it? Or it's going to. He already has shame. He's been really cast out of heaven. Pride is the worst thing that you can have in your life. It will cost you more than anything else. It is pride that makes you think you're important. You know, there's certain jobs that some people think, you know, if I wasn't here, everything would go downhill. And truly and honestly, okay, things may not function as well if you quit your job, but people will figure it out and pick it up. You know, I had one person who says, well, I'll just quit then. I just typed in, sorry to see you go. You know, it was like, you can't go without me. Well, yes, I can. You know, my job can function without me. It can happen. But so many times we get this attitude about us that somebody can't do something if I'm not there. Pride enjoys conversations and events about you. Think about the conversations many times we have with people. People will tell you about something they have done. But what do we often do after that conversation about what they have done? We think about something we've accomplished. Well, yeah, but I did this. Again, it gets you thinking there. Pride believes your thoughts and opinions are right. I'm never wrong. I was wrong once this year, you know. Those are the thoughts you have. I can't be wrong. I know I'm right. Pride resents correction and instruction. How many times do people like to be told they're wrong? I hate being told I'm wrong. You know, pride ignores asking others for advice. You know, we We don't want to ask, I can do this myself. Nope, I'm not asking anybody. Pride can also keep you from asking for help from people who you need help from. Pride really looks down upon others. They're not as good as I am. The single worst thing you can have is pride. It'll cost you more than you're willing to pay, and it will destroy your life. Proverbs warns about pride. In Proverbs 11 and verse 2, if you want to turn there. It says, when pride cometh, then cometh shame. Proverbs 16:11 says, pride goeth before destruction. So we have that in pride. A man's pride shall bring him low. Proverbs 29 and verse 3. So pride is something that can really destroy our lives. You will never hear or read a more important warning in your life, never. Pride will destroy you, and it will destroy you in a shameful way. A fool is a horrible thing. When you start reading in the Bible about a fool, and Solomon teaches about a fool, it talks about somebody who doesn't know God, isn't it? Really, when you start looking at a fool, it talks about somebody who doesn't know God. They're being foolish. Well, there really is something worse than just being a fool. And that's being a proud fool. Proverbs 26 and verse 12 says, seest thou a man is wise in his own conceit, there is more hope of a fool than of him. And here, you know, he's not saying this man is actually wise, but he's wise in his own pride, isn't he? I know all things. Nobody can tell me what to do. Well, there's more chance for a fool that doesn't know God than there is for somebody who's proud, because when you're proud, you're not willing to listen to anybody. You know it all. And so there is one. There is a little hope for the fool. But there's no hope for a proud fool. His arrogance will not allow any instruction or correction. So what does pride do as far as how does God see pride? Or what does God think about pride? God's feeling about pride is pride provokes the hatred of God. If you'll turn over to Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 16, it says, these six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him. The first thing that pops up is a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deviseth wicked imagination, feet that be swift to running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. But the first thing we see here, though, is a proud look, isn't it? Pride, once again. Pride does cause contentions. Proverbs 13, it says, only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. So when you look at this and you look at people who get in fights, either verbal, physical, whatever, what has caused that fight? Pride. Some sort of pride in that person's life. Somebody's wronged me, you know, and then if you're wronged, you want to get revenge for that wrong, don't you? It's pride. And it is a man... It is the main cause of all fights. Without pride, fighting and strife would quickly end. If people would just humble themselves, fights quickly end, don't they? But if we don't humble ourselves and we're going to stand our ground because of our pride, that's where fights happen. It is an arrogant confidence and a haughty self-importance that keeps contention, conflicts, and quarrels going. look at some people who will never, you know, they have this rift between them. Families sometimes have rifts between them. Fathers and children, or mothers and children, won't talk to each other for years. And why is that? Most of the time, there's something to do with that pride, isn't there? Until they apologize to me, I'm not saying a word. They need to come and apologize to me. I was wronged. Now, I will tell you, most times when you think you're wronged and that person is going, a lot of times they don't even know what you did or they did to you until you tell them. You know, that's why God tells us we need to go, if somebody has wronged us, we need to go to that person and tell them. Because a lot of times they may not know even what they did. Sometimes they do, but a lot of times they say something, you know. Let's be honest. We sometimes say things we really don't know exactly how we said it. And we may offend somebody. And then we go along like, oh, we're good. And they're mad at us. Unless they tell us, we don't know. And best way to do it is if somebody offends you, go tell them. But a lot of times we stand on that pride. I'm not talking to those people until they come apologize to me. And there's been problems in churches for that very same reason. Because we won't follow a biblical principle about going to tell people that have wronged us. Men quarrel and wrangle for many reasons, but pride is the trigger. The combustion and the fuel that initiates, sustains, and escalates a contention. And really, we can read this in James chapter 4. If you turn over to James chapter 4, pages are falling out. James chapter 4, in verse 1, it says, "From whence cometh wars and fightings among you? Come they not thence, even from your own lusts that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not because ye ask not." And really, when we start looking at from whence cometh wars and fightings among you, it's from the lust that's in your members, the pride, something you want. Something you desire. That's where they come from. Pride cometh there. But when we look at the answer, let's look at verses 5 and 6. "Do you think that the Scripture saith in vain, the Spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy, but he giveth more grace? Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble." Note here that pride brings God's hand of resistance, doesn't it? God is going to resist people who are proud. When we're willing to humble ourselves, that's where God's going to give his grace, isn't he? It's not with the proud heart, people who's wanting something for themselves. The bottom line is pride is sin. Proverbs 21:4 says, "And high look and a proud heart and the plowing of the wicked is sin." When we look at Sodom, now when we think about Sodom and Gomorrah, we really think about sexual sins, don't we? But there was more to that. There's more to just the sins of Sodom than sexual sins. If you will turn to Ezekiel chapter 16. Ezekiel 16 and verse 49. It says, "Behold, this is the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride. Fullness of bread and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy." So when we really start looking at God and what he viewed Sodom as, what was their main sin? It was pride. Pride was in their heart. What caused them to do everything else that they did? When we really start looking at sins, why do we commit sin anyhow? Because we want to, right? There's a pride in there. This is what I want to do. This is what I want. When we look at pride in America and that, it's all about I and what I want. And I'm going to do things the way I want to do it. Frank Sinatra, Brother Gene likes to bring, I did it my way. That's man's idea. I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. I don't care what the Bible says about it. I'm going to do it the way I want. I'm not following God's law. I'm going to follow my law. That's pride, isn't it? That's really what it comes down to. A lot of the sexual sins is because of the way I want to do it. Homosexuals, if you really talk to them, I chose this lifestyle. Yes, you did. And I even had a few finally admit, you know, I choose to live. Yes, you do. You chose. Remember those words. It wasn't that you were born that way. You chose that lifestyle. You know, there may be desires in people's hearts to do certain things, but we can either choose to do those desires or choose not to do those desires. But really it comes down to when you look at it, when you choose a certain desire, it's the desire, it's the pride of your heart to do it. And so we look at that, and that's really what God says is... Sodom, there was pride, fullness of bread and abundance of idleness in her heart and in her daughters. Kind of talks like America today, doesn't it? Pride results in destruction. We read in Proverbs 16 and 18, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Pride is going to bring destruction. If we keep pride in our heart, it's going to destroy us, isn't it? One way or another. Either it'll destroy us in this life, or, you know, we'll be destroyed in hell, one or the other. But destruction is coming. Pride bringeth shame, as our text said, Proverbs 11 and verse 2, where it says, when pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. So let us now observe how pride brings destruction and shame. Let's take a look, first of all, at Pharaoh during the time where Israel was a captive of Egypt, right? They've been under bondage for 400 years. God raised up Moses, and he was going to deliver Israel out of the king of Egypt's hand. But when Moses went up to Pharaoh and started demanding, let us go, let us worship 3 days in the wilderness and that, what did Pharaoh do? He denied it. Even when they said, let us worship the Lord our God, right? Due to the pride of Pharaoh, the greatest king of the earth at that time, wasn't he? That was the greatest army of all time during that period. He literally destroyed himself, his family, and his nation and army because of his pride. In his pride, Pharaoh, let's turn over to Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 5 and verse 2. It says, and Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go. So Pharaoh, here he is. Who is the Lord? Now Pharaoh at this time, what did Pharaoh kind of represent anyhow? What did he think himself to be? some sort of God, didn't he? So he's saying, well, who is the Lord? Who is this God that I should obey him? Look at me. You know, I'm the greatest king upon this earth. He had pride, didn't he? But today, you know, 3,500 years later, what do men do when they kind of read about what happened to Pharaoh? I mean, when you think about it, we kind of laugh about it, don't we? He was pretty foolish. I mean, that, okay, fine. I could almost understand, okay, the first time. You know, even, I guess, the first three or four plagues, Pharaoh's magicians were able to kind of reproduce those, weren't they? Even though reproducing it didn't help them out none, all it did was add more calamity than what they had before. Well, let's turn water into blood. Well, my magicians can do that. Well, how did that help you? But, you know, pride will kind of make you look that way. Ah, see, they did that too. Even though it made it worse. When we look at the frogs, you know, the frogs happened, and they couldn't really reproduce the frogs, if I remember correctly. But Moses comes in, and he says, when do you want me to take the frogs away? Now, to me, I'd say, now. What does Pharaoh say? Oh, tomorrow's fine. You know, but he had pride, didn't he? And the moment that was taken away, boom. Nope, I'm not going to let you go. Pride, he just kept going through it, didn't he? And so when he never did give his pride away or humble himself. And even after he did let Pharaoh go, I mean, after he let Israel go, what did Pharaoh do? Decided, no, nope, this ain't good. I made a mistake. We're going to go chase after him. And God, of course, destroyed him in the Red Sea. And really, instead of sorrowing over the destruction of Egypt, Israel sang a song, and Miriam led them. And it says, and Miriam answered them, sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and the rider hath he thrown into the sea. So he destroyed the whole army of Israel, I mean of Egypt, because of Pharaoh's pride. Pharaoh just would not give way, wouldn't he? And pride brought Pharaoh to shame, and really his army. When we look at the Philistines, here they are. They're going against Israel. This is about 500 years later, after God had already destroyed the Egypt and their army in that. And here the Philistines decide to fight against Israel. And they never did remember what, well they kind of remembered what God did to Egypt before, didn't they? But that wasn't going to hold them back because, again, men think, you know, I'm greater than that other person is, so I can do this. And they did win a small war in that they defeated Israel and decided, oh, Dagon's stronger than the God of Israel. The only reason they won is because God was punishing Israel, because Israel wasn't doing what they were supposed to. But they took the Ark of the Covenant and put it before Dagon, didn't they? What happened to Dagon? He bowed down to the Ark, didn't he? Twice. Then, you know, the first time, oh, must be a mistake. Let's put him back up there. And next day, arms, feet, everything. He's just a stump. Well, you know, that should have told him something right there, shouldn't it? But they continued to have pride in their God, and God gave them emrods, which are, I guess, hemorrhoids or tumors or something like that, okay? Regardless, they were being tortured even in that point. And they do finally send off the Ark of the Covenant back to Israel. But they never did humble themselves, did they? And it brought them to shame, didn't it? Psalm 78 and 66, it says, and he smote his enemies in the hinder parts and put them to a perpetual reproach. So pride brought the Philistines to shame. And we're going to consider one more person here. Well, really two more. We'll consider this other one. The pride of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, one of the greatest leaders of his day. Due to pride, he comes to shame even in this. You know, he was probably one of the most glorious kings of all times. Probably Solomon probably outdid him, but he was one of the most glorious kings, wasn't he? Because of his pride, he was cut down for 7 years. He walked around really like a cow, eating grass, hair growing, because of his pride. Look what I have done. Look what I have accomplished. Now, even when you think about this, Nebuchadnezzar was already warned by Daniel this was going to happen, wasn't he? He was told, you know, you need to humble yourselves because your pride, if you don't humble yourselves, this is what's going to happen. You are going to go about like a cow eating grass for 7 years. I think it was a year later, Nebuchadnezzar comes into his kingdom. Look what I have accomplished. Look what I have done. Right then and there for 7 years, he was taken from his kingdom. It brought him to shame, didn't it? Now, it seems that Nebuchadnezzar actually humbled himself after those 7 years. But it was his pride that did that. Consider how pride destroyed Herod. Herod Agrippa the First, he was the king of Judah from 37 to 44 A.D. This is the same Herod that had killed the apostle James. He tried to kill Peter. And, of course, he gets up and he makes this speech before people. He's trying to cause these people to come together, and he makes this speech, and the people, oh, listen to him. He has a voice like a god. And he took that pride to himself. Oh, look at me. I'm powerful. Well, what happened to him? He was eaten of worms for receiving the praise of men. And he died. And so we look at just, these are just, what was it, five people we looked at? Pride destroys, doesn't it? So let's consider a prescription for pride. We need to learn to hate it in our lives. If God hates it, we ought to hate it also, shouldn't we? Again, Proverbs 6 and 16. These six things does the Lord hate? Yea, seven are abomination to him. And of course, that first one, a proud look. We must start in our own homes learning to hate pride in ourselves and in our family. So many times when you look at it, our nation seems to be addicted to pride. Just look at our athletes. They glorify themselves, don't they? I mean, if you watch most of them, I mean football, which I've kind of stopped watching, at least the professional, first thing they do, they get into the end zone. What do? And then they do this. Who are they really giving glory to? Themselves. Look what I have done. They glory in themselves. You know, we glory pride at home, and we call it self-esteem. You need to have self-esteem. You know, but so many times when we're doing it, we're really teaching our children to be prideful, aren't we? There is a self-esteem that we have to have. We have to have confidence in ourselves. I mean, we have to have confidence. When we really look at it, we got to have confidence like when we're witnessing to people, don't we? But we got to watch out because sometimes it can become prideful. And so we do. But most of the time we call it self-esteem. And we all we're really doing is building pride. Oh, you're the best person on that basketball team. I know it. Baseball team, whatever it may be. And we're building pride in our kids. Look how great I am. And sometimes we've got to teach them a little humbleness, don't we? A little teamwork. Our nation's theme song seems to be, I Want to Talk About Me. Now, if you've never heard it, it's a country song, you know. I don't mind talking about you, but sometimes I want to talk about me, you know. And truly and honestly, that's what we want to do. We want to talk about ourselves and what we have accomplished. And that truly is America today. We're watching people, even the professional athletes, and this is where I kind of quit watching football, when they won't stand up for the national anthem and they take a knee because of what a president might have said, you know. That's pride. I can do what I want to do, and nobody can tell me what to do. That's really what it comes down to. And so many times in our lives, that's what we do. I will do it the way I want to do it. I don't care what anybody else says. And it destroys. Pride will destroy a man. It'll destroy a home. And, of course, it will destroy a nation. So we need to learn to hate pride. We must humble ourselves. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. First Peter chapter 5 and verse 5. Better put that right where it's supposed to go. First Peter, there we go. 5 and verse 5, it says, likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves to the elders. Yea, all you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace unto the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. So humbleness requires submission, doesn't it? It requires submission to God, but it also requires submission to other people, doesn't it? You do have people who say, I'll obey God, but I ain't obeying anybody else but God. Well, that's not humbleness, is it? We need to be able to submit to God, but to others. There will be no grace for you and I until we humble ourselves in submission. And of course, submission requires faith, doesn't it? In humbling ourselves and submitting to others, we are trusting God to direct our lives and to work things for good. The mighty hand of God that directs our lives can also direct other people's lives. You know, there are people who God has set over us, hasn't he? And we got to trust their leadership. Sometimes we may not see where things are going, do we? We may not understand why people make certain decisions for us, or certain decisions maybe in church or even at work or what have you. You got to have faith they know what they're doing. We may not know the whole answers, but we follow. And that's where the humbleness comes in. So many times, why? Sometimes there may not be, you may not get an answer for why. So we got to have that faith in submitting. You will find that humbling yourself and submitting to God's will for your life, in due time, he will exalt you. And of course, the key word of this is in due time. When we look at the cross before the crown, first suffering and then glory. Luke 14:11 says, whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. The solution for pride is hate it with a passion, humble ourselves with lowliness. Let us get a good vision for who we are. Let's go to Psalms 39 and verse 5. Psalms 39 and verse 5 says, "Behold, thou hast made my days as a handbreadth, and my age is nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity." So what are we at best? Vanity. We're really nothing, are we? Really, before God, we're nothing. You know, somebody may live to be 100 years old, but for God's age, that's nothing. We may gain the wisdom of the world, but as far as the wisdom of God goes, how much is that? Nothing. We're nothing. We're vanity. Psalm 62 and 9 says, "Surely men of low degree are vanity, and men of high degree are a lie. To be laid in the balance, they are altogether lighter than vanity." Psalms 113 says, "Who is like unto the Lord our God, who dwelleth on high? Who humbleth himself to behold the things that are in heaven and in earth?" So when we really look at this, who is like the Lord our God? Is anybody like the Lord our God? You know, man wants to think of himself as a God, doesn't he? And actually, there's an occult out there that says, we'll be like God one day. We will be gods. If we do certain things, we will become a God ourselves. We will become like the Almighty God. Well, when we start really thinking about that, who's the first person who said that? Satan. So when you start looking at that religion, Mormonism, they're basically saying the same thing Satan did, didn't they? We're going to become a God just like the Most High. None of us are going to become a God. God has always been, always will be. He has no beginning and no end. Not according to Mormonism. They believe that God was once like we were, and we can become just like him. Wrong. Again, that's pride, isn't it? When you ultimately look at that, that's pride. Isaiah 40 and 17. All nations before him are as nothing. We're nothing compared to God. And they are counted to him less than nothing in vanity. And really, in the end times, all nations will come before God, and they're going to try to destroy the city in that. And how does God destroy all the nations? He speaks. He don't have to fight. He just speaks. In Isaiah 64 and 6, "But we are all as unclean things." So when we start looking at this, and I mean, if you watch any amount of TV or any amount of movies in that, they will tell you man is good. You know, you're a good person. All men are good. There's some good in them. What does this tell us? We are all as unclean things. There is no good. All our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. We in and of ourselves cannot do anything good. It takes Jesus Christ and him alone and through his shed blood that we are made righteous. It's not what we do. It's what Jesus Christ did upon the cross. And us humbling ourselves, repenting of our sins, and putting our faith in Jesus Christ that saves us. It's Jesus who does it all. "We all do fade as a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, have taken us away." And so let us have a good vision for what God can do through us if we humble ourselves. And that's when God can use us, is when we humble ourselves. When we have pride in our lives, God can't use us. It's only when we humble and submit to Him can God use us. All right, you're dismissed.